Welcome to the world of Culture Pop with Steve Mason and Sue Kowinski. Culture,
comedy, movies, TV, tech, authors, trends,
pop. This is the Culture Pop Podcast.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Culture Pop Podcast. I'm Steve Mason along with Sue Kowinski. Are you awake?
I'm pretty spry for almost 9 o'clock in the morning, Steve.
9 in the morning is a rumor to me. Normally, I would still be in bed. It is the morning after the Super Bowl, which is Monday, February the 8th, as we record this. And of course, it is awards season. So we're getting the opportunity to explore some of the nominated films right now here on Culture Pop. And one of those is The Father. It's the story of a man played by Anthony Hopkins descending into dementia and the devastating effect that that has on his daughter, played by Olivia Colman. Among its recognitions, it has been nominated for 4 Golden Globe Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actor for Anthony Hopkins, Best Supporting Actress for Olivia Colman, and Best Screenplay. And joining us right now is the co-writer and director, Florian Zeller. Florian, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. Thank you for hosting me.
So where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking to you from Paris, where I do live.
Oh, I'm excellent.
French, as you can hear, I'm French. I cannot hide this. So I am in Paris.
So The Father is just a beautiful, beautiful, haunting film. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Date of birth?
Friday, 31st of December, 1937.
You're living with your daughter at the moment?
Yes, until she goes to live in Paris.
No, Dad, why do you keep going on about Paris?
She told me.
No, I didn't.
I'm sorry, Anne, you told me the other day. Have you forgotten? She's forgotten. Paris. They don't even speak English there.
Dad, I'd like you to meet Laura.
How do you do, sir?
I say, you're gorgeous.
Thank you. I must say, he's charming.
Yeah, not always. Laura has come round to help you.
I don't need her or anyone else. I can manage very well on my own.
Everything all right?
Who are you?
Actually, it's me, Paul.
Who?
I live here.
What is this nonsense? Anne?
It's me.
Ah, there she is.
Your father seemed a bit confused.
Something wrong?
Where's Anne?
Sorry?
Anne, where is she?
I'm here.
So you're a prolific novelist and playwright, but this is the first time you are a film director. Why did you decide that this was the play that you wanted to turn into a film?
I don't know, I have to say. When I started to dream about making a film, it was not about making a film. It was about making that film. It was really precise in my mind from the very beginning. And I think that it's connected to what happened with the play on stage, because The Father was first a play. And I remember when we did it in Paris, I was very surprised with the response of the audience. You know, something unusual happened in a way, because people were waiting for us after every performance, and not to say congratulations, you know, but it was more to tell their own story and to share their own story. And it was something really that really surprised me, and I found it very powerful, and it was really moving to me. And they were talking about their own experience, and I realized that something cathartic was at stake. And, you know, it made a lot of sense to me, because I think that art, especially movies, are here to make you feel part of something bigger than yourself. And I think that, I mean, this is when I realized that I really wanted to make that film, to share those emotions.
So this is part of a trilogy, because you wrote The Mother and The Son and The Father. So I wanted to know, because they all deal with, one deals with dementia, The Mother deals with midlife clinical depression, and The Son deals with adolescent depression. What inspired you to write these? Is this come from a personal place?
Yes, you know, yes, it comes from a personal place. Sometimes I'm not always aware of exactly where it comes from, but I know that it's personal. Talking about The Father, I think that, you know, I had this personal experience with living with someone who has had dementia. I have been raised by my grandmother, to be more specific, and she was like my mother in a way. And when I was quite young. When I was 15, she started to suffer from dementia. So I knew a bit, you know, what it was to go through this painful process and what it is to feel impotent in front of someone losing his bearings or her bearings. But I was also aware when I started to write that play that in a way, everyone is concerned, you know, everyone has a grandmother or everyone has a father. And so it was not about telling my own story. And I didn't want to make a film about myself, of course. And I think that's not enough just to want to. It was more about sharing something, you know, because this is the whole point. You know, I come from theater, and theater has this very specific thing is that you are here in the room when your work is received by the audience, you know, because everything is done for that moment where emotions are shared. And so I'm really sensitive to this dimension, to do things with the audience in mind, you know, to share that.
So, you know, I've seen other films about dementia or about Alzheimer's, but this is the very first time, and I think this is the brilliance of the film, is that it gives me the experience of what it must be like to sort of descend into that, to lose, as you would say, to lose my bearing. Talk about sort of the vision for that, sort of putting us in the shoes of the Anthony Hopkins character.
Yeah, you're right. It's the main thing of that film. I mean, because you're right, there are many films about, you know, let's say dementia, but in a way it's always told in the same way, you know, you see, you understand where we are and where we are going. And it could be very moving films, but personally, I really love as a viewer when you are in an active position, you know, when you are trying to be part of the narrative, to try to make it work in a way. And it was the whole idea of the father. I wanted the audience to be in this unique position as if they were in the main character head and as if the film was like a puzzle and you need to play with all the pieces of that puzzle to try to make it work. And you can play with all the combinations. Yeah, there is always like a piece that is missing. And it was something that was really important to me. In a way, I wanted the father to be more than a story, but to be like an experience and to experience a bit what it was, to experience a slice of dementia, you know? And to me, as a director, it was a way to play with the feeling of disorientation of the audience. And this is something that was really important to me. So, and when I made the decision to make that film, it was also because I had the conviction that something could be done thanks to the film itself. I mean, that only cinema can do, you know, something that you cannot experience on stage. And it was like to go as far as possible in this immersive experience. And so it was part of my decision to make that film. And but it's true that the narrative of the play was already to try to tell that story from the inside, you know. But because I didn't want to film a play, I tried to think about how I could translate this experience in a visual way, in a cinematic way. And for example, I remember that I tried to find a way to use the set, for example, the set to play with the feeling of disorientation of the audience. And when I wrote the script, I remember that I drew the layout of the apartment at the same time, as if the apartment was one of the main characters of that story. And it was really a way to put the audience in the main character head. Because at the beginning, you know, how can I say that? You know, when you start thinking of adapting a play into a film, the first ideas you have or the first advices you get is always to write new scenes outdoors to make it feel more cinematic. But here, from the very beginning, I made the decision that I really wanted to stay in this space, which was an apartment, a small apartment, and never to go outside of it, so that that space could become like a mental space in a way, and like an abstraction, and that I could use in many ways to to make that experience even more disturbing. And so we shot the whole film in a studio so that, you know, I had this liberty to play with the set, and I could anytime remove a wall, change the proportion to create this feeling of disorientation. And if you remember at the beginning of the film, you are in an apartment and it looks like Anthony's apartment. There is no doubt about it. You know, you recognize his space, his pieces of furniture, his knickknacks. And then step by step, always in the background, you have some small changes or small metamorphoses on the set. And so that you have this, you know, this feeling that you know where you are because you recognize the space, but at the same time, you're not quite sure of where you are or where you are not anymore. And it's a way for me to, you know, to create the doubt about what is real, what is not real. And the whole journey of that film was a journey through this doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it was so effective. One thing that I remember so clearly is the front door. Front door was the same in every place he was, in every place you took us to. So to me, it was like, well, wait a minute, that looks like, kind of looks like the place. And even like going into the kitchen, I had to think to myself, was that tile the same? Was that table there? I mean, it really was so, so effective. And it didn't feel voyeuristic at all. Like Steve said, you really felt like you were thrown into his mind.
Yeah, but thank you for saying that, because it was exactly, you know, when I said the audience to be in an active position, it's exactly what you said, you know, to be forced to think and rethink about what you saw in order to make it meaningful, you know. And I think that was something important to me, to not to ask the audience to sit and to watch a story already told, but to, in a way, to fight, you know, to look for the meaning. Because what I profoundly believe is that the audience is very intelligent. And I didn't want to make it too easy for them. And I wanted them to look for something. And what was also important to me is that, you know, as I said, you play with all the pieces of that puzzle. But the moment comes when something, it doesn't work entirely, you know. There is so many contradictions on the set, in the story, in the characters, so many contradictions that in a way you have to accept that your brain is not capable to understand everything. And you have to, in a way, to let it go. And when you let it go, something else could happen, which is, let's say, a way to understand the whole story on another level, you know, it like a pure emotional level. And I think that this story, even though the narrative is sometimes complex, I think where we are going or the destination is very simple, you know. It's very simple emotions. And so I wanted the audience to experience this, you know, to try with the brain and then to let it go and to understand everything with the heart.
You know, I was going to say that it's so personal for me, because I actually have an older sister who's in the early stages of dementia.
Oh, really? I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And the thing is that and even, you know, like for these characters, you know, for Olivia Colman, it's like whenever I speak with her or I see her, you know, because I haven't seen her a lot because of the pandemic, it's like sometimes she's lighthearted, kind of like the way he was. You know, he would joke and he would have fun, and then all of a sudden he would get nasty, and it's like every time I see and talk to her, Sometimes I wonder, oh, is she going to be different? Is she getting better? You know what I mean? So yeah. I kind of felt that watching how Olivia was dealing with this, you know, because sometimes, you know, she could have a laugh with him and it was like the old father, you know, would surface. Exactly. And then the reality of how sick he was, you know, would come through.
Yeah, that's a very painful position when you... you know, because love is not enough. You can love someone, but you have to admit that it is not enough. And in a way, you are confronted to your, you know, the fact that we are impotent sometimes in front of this situation. And you never know, as you said, you know, sometimes it could be a good day with a lot of energy and So that's why it's so difficult, you know, to make good decisions. And this character, the daughter playing by Olivia Colman, she is in that moment of her life. You know, she's facing a very painful dilemma because she doesn't know if she wants to keep him at home to help. And she wants to do her best. But on the other hand, she doesn't know if it is the right decision, if she has to find an institution. And it's so heartbreaking because this is the moment when you become, in a way, you know, the parent of your own parents. And it's like going to an institution. It's like it's as painful as if it was about putting your own children, you know. So it's painful emotions. But in a way, we all know that, and it's our condition. So I think that art is here to explore those emotions and also to remind everyone that we are not alone, you know. And it's a connection, and I think there is also like a consolation to remember that we are all connected.
Having seen Anthony Hopkins play this role, it's hard to imagine anybody else doing it.
What's the matter, Dad?
Strange things going on around us.
Don't worry. Everything will sort itself out.
Saw it in his eyes, didn't know who I was. It was like I was a stranger to him. Just did something to me.
I don't know what she's cooking up against me, but she's cooking something up.
What are you talking about, Dad?
I'm not leaving my flat! I am not leaving my flat! This really is my flat. Isn't it? You see, the situation is very simple. My daughter is of the opinion that I cannot manage on my own.
I'm so sorry about this.
Why? She understands perfectly.
It's important. I explained it all to you.
Why do you keep looking as if there's something wrong? Everything is fine.
I think she tries to do the best she can for you, Anthony.
Everything will be all right. I promise you.
There's something funny going on.
I mean, he's got such weight on screen. And so much gravitas, and I feel like I'm really there with him. And my understanding is you and Christopher Hampton, the co-writer of the screenplay adapted on your own play, had him in mind from the beginning, right?
Yes, this is the truth. I remember when I was with Christopher Hampton, you know, we were in New York talking about this dream to make a film from that play. And I told him, you know, when I dream about that film, there is only one face that comes to my mind, and this is Anthony Hopkins' face. And he's the one who said, okay, so let's try, you know. And I thought it would be something almost impossible, but I remember that, you know, as soon as someone comes and explains or proves you that it is not possible, it means that potentially it is. So I wrote the script with him in mind, and that's the reason why the main character's name is Anthony. And you know, one day I just sent the script to his agent, and one day I received a call from someone I didn't know, who just letting me know that Anthony wanted to meet with me. So I took a plane to Los Angeles to have breakfast with him, and this is how it started. And it was like a profound conviction because, first of all, I think he's the greatest living actor personally, but also, you know, we know Anthony through all his roles, you know, and he's always this man in control, very intelligent. And I thought that it would be disturbing, challenging, painful also to see precisely that man losing the control and with a challenge in a way, which was to explore a new emotional territory, you know, because he was not here to do what he's known for, in a way. You see what I mean?
Yes.
He was, and I think that he was really brave to accept to this film because, you know, he's 83. He could just do things that you know he knows that he know how to do them, you know. But here, from our very first conversation, it was clear to him that it was about trying to explore something new and to go as far as possible in this fragile territory. And it was, and in a way, to play with something very personal, which was his own personal feeling of mortality. And it was not, you know, easy in a way. And I think he's really brave.
So here you are, first-time director. Here's Anthony Hopkins, who's, you know, been a screen legend for 50 years. When you get to the set, is there any intimidation factor? You know, I'm doing this for the first time and he's done it so much.
Of course, but I think you have to forget about the intimidation, because otherwise I think you cannot do anything. I mean, you cannot direct an actor if you are too intimidated by him. But talking about Anthony, it was something almost easy, and I'm going to tell you why. You know, I remember when we first met, I was intimidated. But after 2 minutes, you know, I knew that it would be almost easy to work with him, because he is so humble, you know. Humble as an actor, it means that it's clear that he's here to serve something else than himself. You know, he's here to serve the story, the emotions, and also the director's vision. And this is like a gift, because everything that I wanted to do, he gave me the opportunity to do it. You see what I mean? I mean, I had the room to do exactly what I wanted, what I had in mind. So in a way, he was so generous that he made it almost easy.
You know, going, you know, from doing plays to, and now, you know, directing a film, you know, when you're doing a stage play during the run, you know, it seems like the creative process, you know, continues, because, you know, the play can go on for, you know, who knows, a year, 2 years, whatever. You know, after you make a film, you know, once it's completed, that's it, you know? So when you're doing a play, how often do you attend the performances, and do you continue to make tweaks during the run?
I do not continue to write during the run, but I love being in the room to share the emotions and sometimes the joy with the actor. I mean, I love to be part of the troupe, you see. But yes, you work with the audience, because the audience in theater, the audience gives you so many elements. You know, they are playing with the actors. It's like a live collaboration. So you learn so many things thanks to the audience. But I have never rewrite anything, any plays during the run. But it's true that for the cinema, it's another relationship with the time. And but I love that, to discover that new, you know, that new intensity, to just think about one scene and to give everything that you have in your heart, in your soul, in your energy, to make that scene become something alive and meaningful, and to in a way to forget about everything else. And it was even more true for the actors, because, you know, what was important for me is that they were not too conscious, too aware of what we were trying to tell as a story. Of course, we knew that it was a story about dementia, but I didn't want, for example, Anthony to be over aware of that, you know, because I didn't want him to be embodying the illness. You see what I mean? Or trying to play the character. I wanted to go in a territory where almost he had nothing to do. I mean, as if no acting was required, to be, just to be, to try to be as simple as possible, just trying to be there and to see what were the emotions that would overwhelm us. And for example, that's the reason why I made the decision not to rehearse before the shooting. Also, I wanted to be as far as possible from the theatrical process, because I was very familiar with this. But again, what I didn't want to do is to shoot a play. So I made a decision not to rehearse and to go every day and to take the time before the shooting every day to just to rehearse that scene. And because the set was always changing every day, you know, sometimes the team, it was not clear where we were, you know, was it at the beginning, in the end of the story? And it helped us a lot just to be connected to the very now.
You know, the final scene is so emotional, and there is a line that just sticks with me and I have thought about since seeing the movie. Where Anthony Hopkins' character, where Anthony says, "I feel like I'm losing all my leaves." Tell me about that line.
Yes, it's to me that line is, how can I say that? If you see exactly the words of that line, it means nothing, you know, and. On the other hand, you understand everything that it is supposed to be to express. And this is something that I wanted to do in the film, is that, again, you have so many contradictions in the narrative. You are not quite sure to understand exactly who is who, and that character. Is it Paul, or is it a stranger? And that scene, is it before or after? Or in the end, his daughter, is she about to go to Paris, or is she living in London? In the end, everything is uncertain. So it's like you do not understand exactly the line. But on the other hand, everything that is important, you understand it. The emotions and the feeling. And that's why that line was important to me. It was to summarize this contradiction about, it's too difficult to understand, and I understand exactly what we are talking about.
Well, the movie will be released in theaters here in the United States on February the 26th. Ultimately, I'm sure it'll be on a streaming platform. Strongly recommend The Father. It is hypnotic and haunting and powerful. Florian, congratulations, and thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
And that is Florian Zeller. It is just a heart-wrenching movie, Sue.
Oh, yeah. Like, you know, I was saying, you know, dealing with it with my sister, it really gave me a bit of a different perspective of how I deal with her. Because, like I said, I really, really felt like I was there. I really felt like I was in his head. And, you know, it was, and it wasn't like trickery.
By the way, it took me a while to figure out what was going on too, which I think that's one of the genius parts of the film is, yeah. I'm so off balance as I'm watching it and I'm trying to figure out what's going on. And then I realize, aha, this is what Florian wants.
Oh yeah. Especially when the other sister, alleged sister, showed up, it was like, well, wait a minute, and now she's got this husband. But and then when he says, when Anthony Hopkins says to that guy, "What are you doing here?" and he says, "I live here," it's like, what, you know, this yeah. confusion of this guy being Olivia Colman's husband, and then her husband shows up, and
yeah.
it's like,
yeah.
oh my god! And like I said, because some of the set looks so similar, that was like, oh, and just when you think it's like, okay, I know exactly what's going on, then he threw, you know, the real daughter in.
Yes.
You know, it's like, oh my god.
Well, and you know, the thing that's interesting, again, more disorienting for me, is that for a long time I mixed up Olivia Williams and Olivia Colman yeah. in real life. So look at Olivia Colman, I'd say, oh, there's Olivia Williams. Or I'd look at Olivia Williams, I'd say, there's Olivia Colman. So again, here's another form of disorientation, because I mix up the two actresses. It's a great, great film. Definitely seek it out. For anybody who has experienced dementia, my grandfather had dementia related to Parkinson's disease. It takes you there and helps you to understand what they are experiencing, what they were experiencing. In your case, it's present tense. All right, so Sue.
Yeah.
Jacob Imrani makes this show possible every week.
Thank God.
He is a great guy. He supports conversations just like the one we just had with Florian Zeller. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's a car or a motorcycle or a pedestrian or a work accident. You want to call Jacob Imrani and his team to handle all aspects of your case, get you the compensation that you deserve. And by the way, Uber and Lyft accidents go on all the time. Uber has a lot of insurance. Lyft has a lot of insurance. The drivers have insurance. It's very, very complicated. And you want somebody who is a pro to be able to make sure you are well taken care of. And by the way, if you've got a case out there and you're not happy with your current case, the way the attorney's handling it, it's not too late. Call Jacob for a free second opinion. He has been helping thousands of accident victims over the last 24 years. Remember, call Jacob 24 hours a day, 844-24-JACOB. That's 844-24-JACOB, 844-24-JACOB, or remember, accident or injury.
Call Jacob and Ronnie.
Call Jacob. Jacob. There you go. We've got that down like a well-oiled machine.
I know. Took a while, but here we are.
So we've been talking about award season, and we've had some amazing guests to talk about some of the most. And you know, one of the things that's interesting about award season, it seems like all the best movies come out at the end of the year. So we go all year long and we get, you know, popcorn kind of movies. You know, we get Wonder Woman and, you know, we get the new Denzel movie and stuff like that. But it seems like all the very best movies come out in December, and now we're seeing in January and February. So everything is sort of a buffet of unbelievable movies at this time of year. But if you think about it, and The Father is certainly on that list, and Anthony Hopkins is absolutely, just think about best actor. We've seen all these performances. Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, and Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal, and Anthony Hopkins for The Father, and Gary Oldman for Mank. I mean, come on. How do you make a determination between those actors?
Well, that's what's so crazy about, well, this year, and we were talking, you know, before we started the show, this season, and I probably have said this so many years in a row, but this season seems so much more difficult to me because, all right, let's take best actor. Okay.
Yes.
So you have Chadwick Boseman, who was not only just insanely great, but then there's the sentimental, you know, aspect to it, and the sadness of his death, you know? And how do you pit him up against, you know, someone like Anthony Hopkins, who is like phenomenal, like probably the best thing he's ever done.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is really difficult. And then I look at Viola Davis, who was just insanely good. Andra Day was amazing.
Oh, Andra Day is unbelievable.
And I haven't seen Nomadland, although you told me how great it is. And I hear that Frances McDormand, who, you know, when is she not incredible?
Yeah, she's always great, yeah.
So it's such a crapshoot.
Yeah, it really is. And there's still a couple of movies I haven't seen. Like, I haven't seen Promising Young Woman. I hear that Carey Mulligan is phenomenal in that movie. I did see Nomadland, and I don't want to be the cliche because it's won every single award, but it is, for me, the best movie of the year. I mean, it's talk about a haunting movie and a movie for this moment. Nomadland is really that. So that's my favorite movie of the year. But I mean, in a year when I've got so many pictures that I absolutely love, it is really, really tough. And like, do you have SAG votes?
I do.
So have you thought about who you might vote for?
I'd like to see a few more of the films before I make a decision. You know, like, I really want to see Carey Mulligan, and I definitely want to see Frances McDormand.
You should.
And I saw
see
Pieces of a Woman too.
Oh, did you? How is Vanessa Kirby?
Oh, she was incredible.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's a year of, you know, for some of these actresses and actors, it's like, I did my best work the same time someone else did their best work.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it happens that way. By the way, Minari is another movie that you should absolutely see. I love Minari. I got a screener for it over the weekend and just amazing. And Steven Yeun is incredible in that film. An immigrant story, a very American story. Really, really powerful. There are just so many great movies right now. We are trying to catch up with all of them and bringing you some of the names, some of the people that have been involved in both starring, performing in, and writing and directing those movies. So that's one of the pleasures of doing this show, is that we get to bring you those kinds of conversations. Well, there you have it. There is our Culture Pop podcast for today. Thank you very much for listening. We really appreciate it. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. Sue, those reviews are important, right?
They sure are.
We need those. And we will see you next time on the Culture Pop podcast.